Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
And Happy New Year to a few people I haven't seen yet. And thanks to Kate for taking my place last week when I was supposed to be here giving the talk. The new year, 2018. I realize that as I age, the years speed up. I think perhaps we all have that experience. But 2017 seemed pretty darn fast. I hope it doesn't continue. And yet, each new year, when a new year comes, it is, you know, a kind of time of beginnings. And we, as a society, you know, have a custom of making resolutions. This year, fill in the blank. This year, something new. And often, of course, these resolutions don't amount to much. And perhaps because we kind of make them off the cuff, or don't really consider our life, or what is of true importance to us right now, or we're just too distracted perhaps by the circumstances of our life. I was reading a little bit of the Dalai Lama's New Year's address, which I think he did in New York at the beginning of the year, and he mentioned two points that I think are important for us to consider as we enter this year. First, he asks us to reflect on the past year. He said, when you look back, how would you think about the year you have spent? Would you have a sense of contentment, saying that I have lived that year well? Will you ask, have I served the purpose of that year? Or would you be looking back with a sense of regret for all the troubles you have caused? Maybe a bit of both, eh? Now then he encourages us to consider about our life for 2018. He says, it's important that as we begin the new year, look forward. We should project our intention ahead so that we make this year a meaningful one. And when I read that, that raised a question for me. And maybe it raises a question for all of us. What will make 2018 a meaningful year? Now, notice the Dalai Lama didn't say, what will make it a meaningful year for you? Although I'm sure his intention includes you. But I think he's asking for each of us, really, he's asking each of us a broader question, a more inclusive question, perhaps. What will make 2018 a meaningful year for myself? Yes. For my family, my loved ones, the community, and maybe we can keep going, the less fortunate, the ill, the homeless, the animals, the whole earth. I think he's asking us to deeply consider all of it. And yet, how easily we can feel lost, okay? Especially in this broad search for meaning. And soon the thought may arise of, how can I possibly deal with all the confusion and injustice and suffering? But clearly, falling into despair is of no help. Wishing for the situation to be different is of no help. Being overwhelmed by the complexity of this life is of no help. Looking outside for salvation is of no help. In his address, the Dalai Lama explained that all transformation and all change begin in just one place, and that place is within each of us. He said, if an individual were to make a conscious intention to live his or her life with a sense of purpose, live it in a good way, then the ripple effect of that really spreads. First, from the individual to the family, then to the community, and so on and so on. This is how a society gets changed and affected. When we talk about transformation of society, or transformation of the world, the transformation really has to start from the individual, from inside outwards. Now, although the Dalai Lama doesn't use the word, he's talking about the Buddhist understanding of karma. And karma not as some mysterious force or fate, but just as the way that we affect change, we bring about change in ourselves and in the world. Karma. It's one of those words or kind of ideas that have really found a home in the English language. I was looking on the internet, it's become a brand name for some products like perfume, a sports line, medical products. Would you want to use a medical product called Karma? I'm not sure I would. And dog food. There's Karma dog food. And we also tend to use the word kind of loosely. It's my karma. Mostly with a sense of fate or destiny, and usually with a negative connotation, right? So the use of the word karma seems to often refer to something that maybe could not be avoided, like an illness or a flat tire. Unavoidable and yet unpleasant, and somehow we personally are vaguely responsible for it. And yet powerless to fight it. I've noticed that New Age reinterpretations of karma frequently cast it as a sort of luck, and often associated, of course, with virtue. If one does good or spiritually kind of valuable actions, then one deserves and one can expect good luck. Thus, coffee shops have the jars for tips often labeled, karma. And conversely, if one does harmful things, one can expect bad luck or unfortunate happenings in one's life. Good fortune, bad fortune, and fate. That's kind of our general understanding of karma. However, karma in the Buddhist sense of the word has nothing to do with fate or luck. I think this misperception of karma maybe came to the West at the same time as other non-Buddhist conceptions of karma, and particularly the concept of karma that's in popular Hinduism. And so maybe for that reason and other ones, the Western understanding of karma was never clear from the beginning. And then thanks to media and popular advertising, it has been even further simplified. And although it is true that many Asian concepts of karma are pretty fatalistic, the traditional Buddhist concept is not fatalistic at all. Karma, a Sanskrit word, literally means action. And the law of karma refers to the concept of cause and effect. If I plant a carrot seed I will not harvest corn, but carrots. If we plant an orange seed, we will get an orange tree. A certain cause leads to a specific effect. But what does this have to do with our spiritual and emotional lives? Let me read you the first verse from a famous collections of the Buddha's saying known as the Dhammapada. It goes like this. All experience is preceded by mind, led by the mind, made of the mind. If you speak or act with a corrupt mind, then trouble follows you, like the wheel of the cart follows the track of the ox that pulls it. All experience is preceded by the mind, ruled by the mind, made of the mind. If you speak or act with a calm, bright mind, then happiness follows you, like a shadow that never leaves. This is what the Buddha taught about the nature of karma and how we work with it. The Buddha understood that karma was a contributing force that affects us. But of course, there are other forces that affect us as well. For example, in another early Buddhist text known as the Shivaka Sutta, one of the earliest texts that we know of in the Buddhist tradition, the Buddha clearly indicates that not all things happen because of our karma, but sometimes we experience pain from things like disease, carelessness, changes in season, harsh treatment by others. It's clearly, from the Buddhist point of view, not the case that whatever happens to you is the result of karma or past karma. The Buddhist understanding is that we exist within a vast sea of many forms or types of cause and effect. And within that vast sea of various causes and effects, there's a subcategory of causes and effects that is connected to karma. And what karma means here is our intentions behind our actions. So rather than a fixed destiny, karma is more like a kind of accumulation of tendencies and reactions that can lock us into particular behavioral patterns, which themselves result in further accumulations of tendencies and reactions of a similar nature. At times, we may feel powerless and trapped by our karma, and think that the cause of our unhappiness and distress lies elsewhere, with other people, with conditions far beyond our control. But that's not quite true. We are the recipients of our own past actions and behaviors. There's no escape from the fruit of our karmic actions. But karma is also the point of freedom and change. The present moment, this moment, is our moment of freedom. Let's go back to the Dhammapada verse, that very opening line. All experience is preceded by mind, led by mind, made of mind. What the Buddha is saying here is that karma begins with our state of mind or with our intention, which directs the activities of our body, speech, and mind, that in turn creates certain results. So on one hand, karma refers to the experience of cause and effect over a long period of time, We perform an action like angrily rejecting any criticism. And sometimes later, we begin to experience its result. If we do this over and over again, right? Anyone says something, we angrily react. What is the result? Well, maybe nobody wants to speak to us. Maybe our friends begin to avoid us because everything they say we kind of interpret as criticism and angrily react. So that's one aspect, right? That kind of long term. But on the other hand, karma is also kind of an immediate feeling, I think, that arises from an action. Those moments of greed and anger bring subtle and not so subtle painful energies and feelings, while moments of generosity bring openness and lightness. I think we've all experienced this. I was just talking to my younger brother on the phone the other day, and he was telling me how angry he got at this meeting that was happening in his condo. Management condo situation. He got livid and started using foul language, and he said, you know, it felt good. And I said, did it really feel good, Jim? And he said, well, I thought it felt good. Because then, of course, he felt not so good. Right? The kind of, when you start to de-escalate and you realize, you know, the things you've said to people, especially the people, you know, you live next door to, kind of thing, not a good situation. Sooner or later, we are most likely to reap that which we have sown. Right? As it says in the Bible, for example, practice anger and isolation towards others, and you wind up imprisoned in anger and isolation. It doesn't matter if the cause or the justification, it doesn't matter what the cause or the justification of that anger is. When an afflictive thought or emotion is repeatedly brought forth, we become imprisoned. We become imprisoned. We imprison ourselves. It becomes our way of being in the world. And so how do you imprison yourself? Do you have a story, for example, of not being worthy enough, of not trusting? A story of bitterness over a past event or a relationship that you can't put down? Do you easily fall into anger or into self-doubt or into complacency? I think in the end, it's our mindlessness or lack of intention that really is our imprisoner. It's that which imprisons us. Unable to fully recognize the full range of our possibilities in each moment, we become mired in our cultivated over a lifetime habits of not seeing with clarity, but only reacting and blaming, right? At least in some areas of our life. So, what to do? In the Eightfold Path, the famous kind of basic structure, foundational practices in the Buddhist tradition, the first two aspects listed are right view and right aspiration or right intention. If we want to alter the tendency of our karma, we have to see clearly what colors our thoughts and actions. And what I mean by that are those kind of mindless reactions that deepen the ruts of our suffering. The kind of suffering that we end up in all the time. So we need to see that clearly. And we need to see that you are not your karma. That you are more than this moment of suffering, more than this habitual pattern that you keep falling into. I think this is really important. You will experience what you have sown. You will find yourself at some point realizing, you know, no friends, getting angry all the time, getting, leaving a situation all the time, whatever it is. Yeah, you will experience what you've sown, but you're not that. And right view is seeing that clearly. There is potential. There is change always immediately possible. So that's right view. From the point of view of this karmic situation we find ourselves in. So right aspiration or right intention, that second of the second aspect of the Eightfold Path, is acknowledging that all experience is preceded by mind, led by mind, made of mind, as we saw expressed in the Dhammapada. This is where we start, and this is where our freedom is. First, we can practice just being still, sitting in Zazen, silent and aware of our thoughts, feelings, impulses, perceptions. And even just doing that, obviously, we're not at that moment creating more afflictive karma. And we're gradually becoming aware, perhaps, of our unwholesome tendencies. Just noticing the stories that we're telling ourselves about so-and-so, for example, or about ourselves, and realizing, oh, I think that's the eighth time I've thought about that in the past 5 minutes. What is that telling me? This is the root of change, the turning point of life. Intimacy with our inner being leads to greater understanding, greater insight, and greater compassion. Just sitting in Zazen helps us not to be dominated by fear or by hurt, to know a place of greater equanimity. So this way we begin, I think, to create and strengthen a different pattern of mind, one more wholesome and grounded. So when some stress or duress arises, we are better able to avoid a painful reaction by having this created this groundedness, this ground of mindfulness. So in this way, new seeds of afflictive karma are not planted. So, we create intention or motivation behind our action, because intention is the inherent energy of karma. The Buddha said that karma, from the Buddhist point of view, is volition or intention, because the motivation behind any action is what determines the karmic fruit or result from that action. If we can see this clearly, if we understand this, then I think we can accept the enormous responsibility we have to become conscious of our intentions that precede our actions. If we are unaware of the various motivations in our mind, we may unmindfully act on them and thus create future suffering. And the opposite is also true. As the Buddha pointed out in the verse I just read, a corrupt mind or an unwholesome mind will bring unwholesome results, while a calm, bright mind will bring wholesome results. This is the foundation for all the Buddha's ethical teachings and the cornerstone for building happiness. When we fully understand that actions, thoughts, and speech are conditions for the results of our future, we know we have to create the correct intention to allow us to really develop wholesome thoughts, wholesome intentions, wholesome actions. So this is our freedom. If we practice looking deeply in our hearts, in our minds, and acknowledge the source of our actions and speech, and lay the intention for wholesome actions and speech, we change. We make a wise choice for our life. In this way, we are the gardeners of our future. The gardeners of our future happiness, our future contentment, or our future misery. We act in a moral way, in ethical ways, not because the Buddha said to, or that because the precepts, what's written down, says don't lie, don't steal, don't kill, don't misuse sexuality, etc. But because when we bring our awareness to our thoughts and actions, we come to understand what will really bring a truly deep happiness for ourselves and others. And we understand what will ultimately bring suffering and discontentment to ourselves and others. It is this intention, this deep intention, that the Dalai Lama asks us to cultivate for this year, in 2018. So how do we do that? I found one good way to begin to practice awareness and its connection with karma is to focus on speech. For the next couple of weeks, pay close attention and notice your state of heart. Notice your intention before you speak. Is my intention to defend myself? To show how much I know? To impress the listener? Is my intention to speak out of concern and compassion? To share a moment of happiness and joy? To offer help? And once you become aware of the intention, then notice the response that you make. Maybe you do it anyway, right? I want to show how much I know. Blah, 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 blah. And then ask yourself, was it skillful and wholesome? Or was it unkind and unskillful? Just notice. This practice is not meant really to create guilt or self-criticism. It's really meant to develop our awareness and transformative qualities of mind. We can change. If an unskillful intention arises from a feeling of anger, for example, you could try simply not responding at that moment. Just feel the anger. Shut your mouth. Wait. And maybe let those difficult feelings of hurt and anger settle. It's kind of a simple practice, it seems, this idea of creating attention, bringing your awareness, But as Dzogchen Norma Fisher once said, you know, 90% of practice is remembering to do it. We got to remember to do it. So that's why I suggest give yourself, start with 2 weeks and make that a really strong intention to really notice the motivation, the intention behind whatever you say. Through a simple awareness of our intention from moment to moment, we can create patterns of well-being that will shape our life, benefit others, and ripple out into the world. All experience is preceded by the mind, led by the mind, made of the mind. If you act or speak with a corrupt mind, then trouble follows you, as the wheel of the cart follows the track of the ox. All experience is preceded by the mind, ruled by the mind, made of the mind. If you speak or act with a calm, bright mind, then happiness follows you, like a shadow that never leaves. So let's together not make resolutions in the way that we perhaps have done in the past, but let's really set an intention. What is most important in your life now? How will you make 2018 a meaningful year? And what does that mean for you, for your loved ones, for your community, for this world? As the Dalai Lama said, and I really believe, it starts within each of us. And that's the only place it can begin. Yeah. Happy New Year. Thank you, everyone.